Our presenter today is Nandi, who will be discussing decolonizing spirituality. Nandi is a health equity and well-being consultant at UW-Madison's Office of Equity, Inclusion, and Employee Well-Being. Nandi has been working in the fields of social justice and holistic health for over a decade and has a background in cross-cultural research, teaching and training using experiential techniques. Nandi earned a Bachelor of Science degree in psychology and biology and is also a UW-Madison alum, where they earned their Master of Science in Counseling Psychology. Nandi grew up in the American South and brings their lived experience as a queer, trans person of color.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for inviting me into your space. Oh, thank you. Especially on Diwali weekend. That was so cool to be able to hear a bit of the story. There's actually so many stories and fables associated with the holiday because it lasts like a week. Again, my name is Nandi. I use any pronouns. So she, her, they, them, he, him are all good. You literally can't get it wrong. I also am a licensed psychotherapist here in Wisconsin. So I approach a lot of my work through a mental health and also holistic health lens. I've worked in a lot of different areas of healthcare, as well as mental health care. So that's kind of the approach that I take to a lot of this work. Wanted to go to the next slide. So first, I just want to take a moment here to acknowledge the history and the communities and the ancestors of this place, the ancestors who are walking with you all here today, as well as any ancestors that you may call upon in your life, past and present, especially as stewards of all the spiritual paths we walk. And one of the ways that we can engage in that work is through experiential learning. And what that is just a really fancy way to say storytelling. So now that the kids are mostly gone, we're gonna just get into a little storytelling, just us. So I know it was Diwali last week, and also it was Halloween. So I know with everything going on, it's still a very spooky time. So this is just a little bit of a spooky story that my father would tell us growing up. It's not too scary, so don't need to brace yourself too much. My father is from a really remote village in South India, in Karnataka, and this story is from that village. So it follows the experience of this young guy. He's like in his teens, and he's out working in the fields that's like outside of the village. So there's like the village main, and then there's always like a temple right outside the village to kind of like protect the perimeter. And then it's like just farm fields everywhere. So he's out there working. And you know, when you're like kind of on a roll with work and you just like completely lose track of time. So this is happening to this guy. And it gets to be the end of the day and it's like getting darker and darker. And then he looks up and he's like, oh, the sun's going down. I should get home. So he's walking home, and then he comes across this lone sheep. It's just all by itself. And he's like, oh man, like it must have gotten away from my neighbor's flock. I should get it to go home. Otherwise, you know, there's tigers out there. Like it's probably going to get, it's going to become someone else's food. So he's trying to like urge it along. And this sheep is very stubborn. It is not moving. So he's like, whatever. And he just picks it up and puts it over his shoulders. And he just continues walking home with the sheep over his shoulders. And he, as he's approaching the village temple, the sheep starts to get heavy, and it's going closer. It's getting heavier and heavier and heavier. And just as he's about to reach the temple, this sheep just starts feeling like lead. And so right before he starts feeling his knees about to buckle under the weight, he like puts it down. And then, you know, when you put down something heavy, you gotta like stretch a little bit. So he's doing that. And then he looks down and the sheep is gone. Like it just disappeared. And he's looking, it's nowhere. But it's also, you know, this is out in the country. There's not like electricity or like street lights or anything like that. So he also can't really see very well. And it's really pretty dark at this point. So he's like, okay, whatever. Like, I'm just gonna go home. And so he gets home and he's telling his mom about this experience. And you know, when you're like telling an elder something and they're just like giving you that look like, you tried that. Like, I've been there before. So after he tells his mom this story, she's like, you know, that wasn't really a sheep, right? And he's like, what? She says, that was a demon. And what happens is, these demons, they prey on people who are working too hard and they're isolated and all alone, and they target them and they try to get you to sneak them into the village, and then they start sowing doubt in the community and wreaking havoc. And what happened was, you know, the village and your family and your connection to the temple is so strong that it protected you. And it protected all of us. So growing up, you know, this was kind of just like a little ghost story, just like a little spooky story that, you know, my dad would tell us before bed. Thanks, Dad. But it really wasn't until I was older that I understood the message a bit more. And the first lesson here is that threats to our well-being and our safety may often appear innocent and unassuming. Secondly, working harder and longer than is necessary opens us up to these threats to our well-being and can lead us to feeling isolated and unwell. And lastly, nothing that must hide in the dark has any true authentic power of its own. And having a strong community, good health, and a mindful attitude are all protective factors against any threats to our well-being. Now, there's a lot of different aspects to well-being, but today I want to talk specifically about spirituality, and in particular, decolonizing spirituality and what that means. Decolonizing spirituality is a journey to unravel and rebuild, to learn, relearn, and unlearn. And I want to invite us to examine the spiritual practices that we hold, the values they teach us, and the ways that we engage in them. Decolonizing spirituality is a complex, transformative journey, and I really hope that this conversation can be a step towards fostering genuine, respectful, and liberated practices. Next slide. So let's first start with understanding what colonization has done to spirituality. Next slide. So colonization as a force did not just occupy lands and resources, it also occupied our minds, our cultures, and our souls. Traditional indigenous and ancestral spiritual practices were suppressed and even erased, replaced with dominant systems that often negated local customs and beliefs. For many cultures, it wasn't just a religious shift. It was a removal of our connection to the land, our communities, and our identities. And colonization fostered hierarchies, treating certain religions and philosophies as superior while labeling others as primitive or superstitious, or at worst, promoting devil worship. And while overt colonization of spirituality may not look like how it did even like 50 years ago, a lot of these ideas and beliefs still persist today. And many of us might unconsciously carry spiritual ideas rooted in colonial frameworks, which can reinforce these structures of supremacy, perpetuate cultural appropriation, and alienate us from our own spiritual paths. So, next slide. In our search for true meaning and connection, many of us have turned to indigenous or non-Western spiritual practices, and it's human nature to seek wisdom, but we have to tread carefully here. Next slide. Appropriation happens when elements of a culture are taken and used out of context, often for profit or social capital, without acknowledgement of their origins or respect for their sacredness. For example, practices like smudging or yoga or even some types of meditation practices can sometimes be completely stripped of their cultural roots and sold as lifestyle products. And this detachment can dilute the power of these practices, disregarding the communities who created and sustained these practices for thousands and thousands of years. Appreciation, however, involves a deep respect, context, and reciprocity. It means not only learning about the spiritual practices of another culture by actively supporting and uplifting those communities that own those traditions, and we can really gather around and try to support these practices in a more meaningful way. We could ask ourselves, are we truly honoring the original teachings, or are we kind of picking and choosing what suits us? Are we contributing to these communities, or are we just taking from them? Here on the screen, you can see a number of examples of why and how certain spiritual practices may be closed. They might have started as closed to begin with, or they might have been closed due to appropriative practices. Next slide. One really powerful approach to decolonizing our spirituality is to start by reconnecting with our own roots. Many of us have ancestral traditions that we may not be fully aware of, either due to personal, familial, or historical disconnection. And by learning about our own cultural heritage, we not only honor our own ancestors, but also cultivate practices that resonate deeply within us and reduce the likelihood of appropriating from others. Because the thing is, a lot of Europeans came to America to practice spiritual freedom. That's the core of the reason why a lot of us are here. But they left these traumas fleeing from exclusion, persecution, and poverty. And many arrived here poor, destitute, and sick. Our European ancestors' trauma ended up breeding more trauma. And what I tell people is that trauma is one of the most potent and transmissible diseases out there. It's not the flu. It's not COVID. It's trauma. It's passed on to other people, to our family members, to our friends, to the plants, the animals, and the earth itself. And whiteness as it exists in America was a way of uniting various European people into a power structure that benefited them by oppressing other people. By surrendering their culture and their ethnicity, our ancestors were able to get access to things that other groups didn't. And this matches up with stories almost every white family has of one of their generations refusing to speak their mother tongue, refusing to talk about anything that happened back home, or being humiliated that their parents or grandparents didn't assimilate into American culture fast enough. And this is categorized under the umbrella of America's melting pot. And it's often looked back on almost nostalgically instead of as the collective trauma that it actually was. Assimilating into whiteness was forced upon many people, but was a choice that European people made. And I think a lot of us have forgotten that. And this collective assimilation created a hole, a void in our hearts. And this homogenization didn't just create a new culture as maybe some people intended it to, but a void for hate. Because if you're someone who identifies as white, you might have felt this feeling without even having a name for it. It's this existential dread, this nihilism in which you feel detached from time, history, and your place in it. And what you may have been told by people in power is that that void gets filled with things. Our capitalist society will tell you that the next new shiny thing, the next new trending culture is what's going to do it for you. And it might, but only fleetingly. So exploring your own ancestral traditions can be incredibly empowering and is inherently part of decolonization work. And it can be really beautiful and life-changing. And it also might bring some discomfort as we encounter our own histories of colonization and loss. This journey invites us to reweave threads that may have been broken, mending these connections with practices that are authentically our own. We often discover that many Indigenous and traditional cultures, despite their differences or despite their place in the world, share a lot of similar values around community, respect, and balance with nature. For example, I am of mixed race. My father is South Indian and my mother is German and Irish. And over this past summer, I visited my ancestral lands of Ireland and learned about the history, culture, and traumas of my ancestors. And part of it was really beautiful. And also, part of it was really hard. I had to reckon with the privilege that my Irish ancestors had to flee and mourned for the many people that they left behind. So, how can we participate in open practices mindfully and meaningfully? Next slide. I always promote the research, reconnect, and revitalize model, aka knowledge, awareness, and skills. So take time to explore the history, practices, and values that your ancestors used to heal and connect to the divine. And this is connecting to the divine prior to colonization. And think about how you might incorporate these practices into your life. Consult with others who are in the culture or community and find culturally relevant alternatives to practices that you might be interested in. connect with others who are on this journey. And finally, practice mindfulness. Avoid the capitalism trap. Avoid hopping on trends too quickly. And when incorporating a new practice into your life, pay attention to how you feel before and after. Next slide. Because decolonizing spirituality requires not just knowledge, but also practice, and with practice, humility, it's essential to hold ourselves accountable for the ways that we engage spiritually. Next slide. So here are just a few principles that we can use to guide us. First is reflect and educate. So educate ourselves on the origins and significance of any spiritual practice we engage in. Reflection also means questioning whether our use of a practice is genuine or merely convenient. Next, be willing to take a step back. If a particular practice doesn't necessarily belong to our culture, or if we're unsure about its usage, it's okay to just pause, even temporarily, and just take a step back. Some practices just aren't necessarily meant for all people, and there's no harm in acknowledging that. Next, offer gratitude and support. When you do engage in a practice from another culture, offer gratitude, show appreciation through action, support Indigenous communities, donate to their causes, amplify their voices, and respect their requests regarding how their traditions should or shouldn't be used. Next, engage with reciprocity. Many spiritual traditions are rooted in reciprocity and giving back. If we're going to engage with certain teachings or practices, it's really essential that we find ways to give back to those communities that have stewarded those practices. And lastly, acknowledge that it's a lifelong process. Decolonizing our spiritual paths is a journey, not a destination. Be patient with yourself, be kind, and with humility and openness, we can continue to learn and grow together. Next slide. So as we draw to a close, I want us to just imagine a world where our spiritual practices honor our unique roots, respect other traditions, and connect us more deeply to ourselves, our communities, and the earth. As we work to decolonize our spiritual paths, we may find that our spiritual lives expand, becoming more nourishing and real. And we might find that by relinquishing practices that don't necessarily align with our roots, we make space for practices that deepen our relationship to ourselves and our ancestors. Finally, I invite each of you to consider these couple questions. First, what does decolonizing spirituality mean for you personally? And next, what practices or beliefs do you hold that might require examination? So essentially, how can you cultivate a practice that is authentic, respectful, and life-giving both for you and your community and the communities that that practice may come from? To end, this work is not easy, and it often requires us to confront discomfort, but in that discomfort lies the opportunity for profound growth and healing. By consciously decolonizing our spiritual paths, we ultimately aim to move closer to a world where spirituality is a force for unity, liberation, and true respect.